Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level, fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by
at Blinds.com, it's not just about window treatments. It's about you, your style, your space, your way. Whether you DIY or want the pros to handle it all, you'll have the confidence of knowing it's done right. From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Shop up to 40% off with minimum purchase and a free professional measure right now at Blinds.com. Plus, pay at your own pace starting at 0% APR with Affirm. Terms apply.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment.
I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And today, we're going to talk about a couple of different topics, and starting with what happens with this team when LeBron returns. It seems like it's far away, right? We don't even have Luka back quite yet, although hopefully maybe over the course of this weekend or the next few games at least. But the projection or hope is that LeBron is back by week 2 or 3 of November. That's 2 or 3 weeks away. And so to help us digest this, very excited, the host of Hoops Tonight, which for my money is the best general NBA pod or content that you're going to get out there, Jason Timpf, coming back to the show. Jason, welcome back, man. How you doing?
It is an honor to be here. I've been such a big fan of this show for such a long time. It's always so crazy to get here and talk hoops with you guys. And again, I was pretty down. I was telling you guys before we started, I was pretty down after that Luka news, but all of a sudden these wins against Minnesota and Sacramento got me all fired up. I'm excited.
Heck yeah, man. Before we get into it, it's Austin week here on the LFR pod. Talk to me. Just give me your take on what Austin's doing right now.
All I could think is like, it's just been so cool. I texted you about this last night, Pete, like just the from start to finish, seeing like every chapter of Austin's career from like dude who is the plus minus hero off the bench to kind of finally starting to get some opportunities to secondary kind of tertiary ball handler off of D'Lo to suddenly D'Lo getting shipped out and him becoming the number two off of LeBron to I had some serious concerns last year as to whether or not he was really concerns is the wrong way to put it. I just was questioning whether or not he was actually capable of being the number two next to Luka in the long term. And I think he looks so much more athletic, strong, better at handling ball pressure, and just more well-rounded as like a playmaker that I all of a sudden look at the future of Luka and Austin as a much more tenable pairing. A basic way for me to put this is like, I think there are a lot of guys in the league that can fill the box score. But Austin is channeling high-level offense for entire units now. A simple way for me to put this is when Austin has been on the floor over the last three games with no Luka and with, by any measure, pretty mediocre NBA talent relative to the field, he's logged a 120 offensive rating when he's been on the floor. It's crazy. Not just him putting up points. He is channeling a team offense that is working against some pretty athletic teams, which is what we had worried about with him in the past against ball pressure. So I think he's just like acing the test spectacularly to start this year.
Yeah, I made an analogy on yesterday's podcast where I was talking about The Matrix and that scene where Neo has been programmed with all the karate stuff and he sort of wakes up and says, like, I know Kung Fu. That's how I feel about Austin right now. He has jumped so many levels over the course of what is still like a young NBA career and has really found a way to not only increase his production to the degree that he has where it's like, oh, a 50-point night, a 40-point night, a 16-assist night. But is doing it in a way that where Jason says it's like it's uplifting the entire team, which is impacting winning. And the drop off between him and the other sort of non-ball handlers that the Lakers have had to go to without Luke and LeBron, seeing those groups not be able to score at all or to basically do anything without Austin on the court, it just shows you the gulf in terms of the difference. And having a player like that is such a luxury, particularly because his roots are as an off-ball worker who could do the little things. And I don't believe those parts of your game ever leave you. I look at a guy like Jimmy Butler, for example, and he's still a dude who is totally comfortable wrestling in the mud with you if he has to, because Absolutely. That's how he came up in this league. Mm-hmm. And so even though he can be the guy leaning over the scorer's table gassed because he's scored 12 straight points in an NBA Finals game and is almost single-handedly willing his team to a victory, that's the same dude that's just like, lock him up on a guy and he's like, I'll go toe-to-toe with you. I'll box out a center. I will defend the post against Jokic. I will, because nothing on the court is out of his reach because he came up doing all of those things. And so Austin, with that lineage that he has as a role player, mm-hmm. I don't think you ever really lose that. And he'll be able to channel it, I think, at the proper times.
Absolutely. However, we've framed so much of this through the Austin summoning his inner role player to play alongside Luka and LeBron that I would like to flip that question around of what happens when LeBron returns and how does LeBron need to fit into this? One of the unique opportunities of this period of time is that we were talking about this on yesterday's pod. If there were problems that popped up, like the end of that Minnesota game, and we're a little confused by their defense, there's no, oh, well, just give the ball to Luka. It's not, no, you have to figure out that scenario with Austin Reeves. And there is no LeBron next to you or anything like that. But Austin, as you illustrated, Jason, is carrying entire units worth of basketball that are then falling off of a cliff and showing that gulf that you were talking about, D, that I would love to explore this idea of what happens when LeBron returns with you guys. And before we get started on that, Jason, I know LeBron is somebody who captured your fascination long ago, and both you and I have come upon a career in this starting as fans, right? And so I just love to hear, like, LeBron, your relationship with being a fan of LeBron. Tell us that story.
So I want to keep it really simple here, because obviously you could talk about LeBron for an hour easily if you tried to. I grew up in a baseball and football family, and both my brothers played college football, and there wasn't much basketball going on in the Timp household. But I randomly came across him, not the year that they beat the Pistons, but the year before in 2006. It was in game 7 when they actually ended up losing. And I was just fascinated the storytelling surrounding that game. I can't even remember if it was TNT or if it was ABC at the time. But whoever was broadcasting that series did such a wonderful job setting up like the storytelling of that series that I got kind of hooked as a fan. And then his entire 2007 season, I was just really keyed in on him. And he got me to fall in love with the game. And what's crazy is I didn't grow up in a basketball house at all, but now basketball has become my entire life for the entirety of my life. And so it's been like kind of there's a sentimental attachment that I have with LeBron that will never go away until he retires, obviously. And it will obviously be something that affects my job. Obviously, I'm a fan of the teams that he's been on over the years. I want to, as far as him as a basketball player, to keep it really simple, he's always, in my opinion, because he's so benevolent and happy and just doesn't look like a mean person, I think he's always been super underrated as a competitor, as just a guy who's willing to do absolutely anything to win. And this will actually kind of transfer nicely into the conversation surrounding how he helps this team. But throughout his career, and I'm not naive to the fact that LeBron's got an army of detractors, and most of the stuff that comes from that group is not legitimate. But throughout his career, he's kind of picked up this reputation of being a difficult player to play with, which makes no sense to me because every iteration of his career has been so different. Like, you could not pick a more different set of complementary players than Dwayne Wade or Kyrie Irving or Anthony Davis and now Luka Doncic and Austin Reeves. Like, he has taken very different roles at very different phases of his careers. Like, alongside Anthony Davis, even his defensive role is very different than what he was alongside Tristan Thompson and Kevin Love, when he was much more of like a rim protector. His rim protection was one of the most underrated parts of his role on the 2016 Cavs that won the title. Like, he's played so many different roles throughout his career. And he's already begun this transition into more of like an off-ball kind of complementary star over the course of the last few seasons, when he's been more of a screener, when he's had back-to-back seasons as a high-level catch-and-shoot player. I just think he's been highly underrated as a player who's willing to do whatever it takes to win. And the last thing I'll say about it is, throughout my life, whenever there was a big game, after 2011, whenever there was a big game, I never in a million years thought LeBron wouldn't show up. He was just the most reliable, like, we got a big game tonight, mm-hmm. and I know LeBron's going to be awesome type of player.
Yep.
And that just made him really easy to be his fan, because he just always came through. You know, there was never a time when you lost, you know, LeBron wasn't good enough. You know, it always just felt like he was there doing whatever he could under his control.
These are great points about LeBron. And this is where the arc of every truly, truly great player, like the guys who are on like the LFR artwork, those impact players across the entire sport that just happen to wear Lakers jerseys, they all have that piece to them, which is the ability to impact the game in a multitude of ways and hold the center of the game like with them and move it in whatever direction they want it to in order to get a win. The same way that you were talking about LeBron, Jason, is the same way that Pete and I will talk about Magic Johnson. This guy who, as a rookie in a title-clinching game, was just like, yeah, I'll play center. I'll grab 15 rebounds and score 40 points when the idea of me is the masterful passer. And even when he came back in 96, it's just like, yeah, I'm much bigger and slower.
I'm a power
now.
Forward now.
Yeah, just put me in the post and I'll shoot hooks over guys, because that's just what I'm going to do now. And the evolution of LeBron to me has been very similar of like the truly great multi-positional, versatile players over the course of their careers. And I think, Pete, for me, this is what should give people hope about mm-hmm. what LeBron can be with this version of the Lakers. It is the guy who is maybe one of the best cutters of all time. It is a guy who is a fantastic spot-up shooter. It is a guy that you feel comfortable playing out of the corner, playing above the break, playing out of the post, setting screens on the ball, setting screens off of the ball, handling the ball in horns or at the top of the frame as action whirs around him. A guy who can be a hub in a classic big man sense, as well as be a hub in the way that Luka's a hub. And LeBron was like the prototype of that style of basketball. So I think he can do anything he wants to do. I've said this to you before, though. When you can do anything you want to do, then you actually have to want to do the thing on that specific play sure. in order for it to sync up with what the team needs. And so to me, that bridging that gap as to him not only understanding I can do it all, but on this play or on this series of plays or over these strings of possessions, I have to do it this way because that's exactly what the team needs. I want to see that continue to go with this group of guys.
Let's go to break here. When we come back, I want to get into the nuts and bolts of it. So I think the first primary question that pops up here is, how off ball should LeBron be at this point? With the ascension of Austin and the ability to carry those entire units, Austin, as good as he is, I would argue has a less versatility than LeBron. He can impact the game in a multitude of ways, but not as many as LeBron, as a function of experience and size and know-how, right? And so in those cases, I think asking the more versatile player to be the one who adjusts a little bit more is appropriate. When I did the little project I always refer to on the pod, Jason, about like the really serious games in this post-Luka trade and the isolation attacks that they did, one of the things that always stood out to me was the distribution of how often Luka got to do it, LeBron versus Austin. And it was really like a 45 LeBron or 40, I might be reversed, like 45 Luka, 40% LeBron, and about 15% Austin. I think on this year's team, those numbers have to move, and that Austin is currently establishing himself in a role that is not just relative to LeBron, but relative to the whole team. The team is becoming dependent upon Austin doing exactly what he's doing now, that by mid-November, that will be a little more calcified. Not necessarily that it can't change in any degree. It's a long season, and it certainly will. But for all of the versatility of LeBron, he's the leading scorer in NBA history and arguably the greatest on-ball player of in NBA history. So how do you square those two things?
So I don't want to sit here and say that it's a good thing that LeBron was hurt to start the season. And I do think it's ridiculous that some people seem to believe that Austin and Luka are succeeding because LeBron is out. I think it's completely reasonable to look at the situation and be like, Austin and Luka got better this summer. Both of them did. Luka was on the cover of Men's Health, and Austin kind of sort of had a rough series against Minnesota and spent the summer in the lab, and he came back as a better basketball player. But similarly, LeBron James, I thought, had his last great peak last year around the trade deadline. There was like a 16-game stretch spanning before the Anthony Davis trade and after the Anthony Davis trade where I thought he was playing literally as well as the best players in the world. It was about a 29-point triple-double. It was like a 29-10-9 on like 62% true shooting.
Crazy.
He was playing at like an all-defense level on the other end of the floor. He was marching into Madison Square Garden and completely dominating like it was 2018 again. Like, it was a completely different version of LeBron than kind of what we had seen surrounding that, especially to start the year, right? So I think it was kind of a different dynamic where I even saw Luka seemingly defer to LeBron quite a bit in his first few games because LeBron was just playing so damn well that it didn't even make sense to take the ball out of his hands. And what I think will help facilitate the shift in the balance that you're referencing, Pete, is the fact that LeBron is going to have to work his way in with two guys that are playing the best basketball of their careers. And I think that will kind of naturally facilitate that dynamic because I think LeBron knows that he's not in the same position in terms of rhythm, conditioning, and just overall polish that he was last year in mid-February. The second piece of it is I think a lot of this is going to be matchup dependent. One of the things that has stood out to me a lot from these last three games is Austin is just so good at getting downhill with speed and ball screens. But there will be matchups. I think Oklahoma City is a good example coming up soon where it's going to be different when there's like more speedy ball pressure guards and not the same type of bigs that can be attacked in space, where I think it'll make more sense to lean more on bigger playmakers like Luka in that particular game because LeBron won't be back yet, and then LeBron in the future. And so I think a good portion of it is matchup dependent. But that said, I think in general, it's going to be really hard for LeBron just to walk back into the situation and take 45% of their ISO reps. Like, I think naturally his injury will cause that balance to shift to start when he comes back.
How do you see this playing out, Pete? What is your ideal pathway, or how do you envision it going as smoothly as it could?
So how it plays out, I can't predict quite so much, but I do think Jason's point about he's going to be working himself back into a physical peak, that will sort of naturally make him more of a tertiary option, along with the reality that, yes, not every team will be an Austin at the one leading as the second chair with Luka. Luka will be the every game guy in that, but I do think that between Austin and LeBron, you have all bases covered ball handling wise from a secondary ball handler. And so that how the Lakers are able to shift between the LeBron at point guard version of the team versus the Austin at point guard version of the team is going to be one of the intermediate steps of this season, I believe. How I kind of dream about it and the idealized version of it when LeBron's healthy and feeling good and up to speed is you used to always call him the key maker, right? And that he was the guy that had the skeleton key that could unlock any door and solve any basketball problem because he's so complete as a basketball player. But oftentimes he will, and this is true of the very rare players who can do this, is that they can only kind of be one at a time, or like they get in a certain mindset where that's who they are. And there's a version of LeBron that I think of as Le Draymond, you know what I mean? Like sort of a Draymond Green that is also awesome as a scorer, but it's that I'm able to call out things defensively, right? There's a certain synergy with Ayton as well. Like a lot of what LeBron does, I think is perfect big man fit, like the four next to an Ayton style five that, I don't know, I've been doing a happy dance this last week on a lot of different things. And so that version of LeBron that is really the most dominant version of himself defensively, which I know is insane in year 23 and maybe not possible, and maybe a road to physical deterioration, but he's so brilliant with his mind, Jason, and his call outs of the coverages, the communication, the talking, the seeing things a bit before everybody else does, that even if it's not a situation where he's risking tweaking his groin or something like that, but he's just communicating with his teammates, that's the best version of LeBron that I see. But there are many versions of him, and in reality, he's going to shift between one and the other based on particular plays. But I do think, like, remember Jason in the Minnesota series, I forget which game it was, but where he just had like three blocks down the stretch of the fourth quarter, right? And he just took over the game defensively. We didn't win it, but he was just decided, this is who I am for this stretch of the game. He'll do that sometimes. And that's my favorite version. How do you see this, Jason?
Yeah, I mentioned that exact stretch when I was talking with Trevor and Jovan this morning. I was like, does anybody remember the end of the Minnesota game when he became a defensive ball? And like, not to go off the rails here, but like, I remember coming into the season, I just thought to myself, like, I bet you Steph Curry is awesome to start this season because he knows they have a shot. And he knows he needs to be at his best. And when I saw him score that 13 straight at the end of the Denver game to push it to OT, I was like, yeah, of course. Of course he's locked in like that to start the year. I similarly look at LeBron and like, you have to think LeBron's sitting on the sidelines watching or from at home watching and going like, oh man, this is my last best chance.
Yes.
And what that makes me think is that back to what we were talking about earlier about him as a competitor, I expect him as a basketball mind to be sitting down going like, this is what they need help with. This is where I can be of service here. This is where I can be of service there. Like, oh man, like Austin was really fatigued at the end of that Minnesota game and no one could create a shot. He tried going to Rui and Rui ended up literally on his butt at the top of the key shooting from the ground. Like, it'd be nice if we had someone else that we could throw the ball to here. You know, I think he kind of sees all these different ways he can plug in. I love you how you talked about the backline thing. I can actually think of nobody better to kind of anchor Ayton as a big who I've been delightfully surprised by him on defense to start the year. He's just so physically talented. It's really that simple. And I can think of nobody better than someone behind him to be the brains of his operations, to help him remember his role in the game plan, to stay attentive to specific details, to kind of be keyed in on when he needs help and when he doesn't. And to your point, like, no one's asking him to literally fly around and clean up everything, but if he could just at least deploy his mind on defense every single night, that would go a long way. And then I think in general, his offensive versatility is kind of perfectly suited for this situation. He's become a very good catch and shoot player over the years. Like, even in the Minnesota series, like, Austin struggled with catch and shoots. LeBron shot the ball well from three in that series. Like, I think LeBron's going to be able to pick and choose his spots pretty smoothly. And also with these units, especially when Austin is on the floor and Luka is off, I think that LeBron's going to be able to give Austin just that little bit of extra support with fatigue. I think you've seen him deal with a little bit of fatigue over the course of games from ball pressure. And I just think of him as a guy that's going to be able to plug a bunch of specific holes. They've been a weak defensive rebounding team to start the year. I can think of nobody better to address that than LeBron James to step in. I think connective playmaking out of blitzes from Austin and Luka fried these teams so bad that both of them were drawing blitzes 30 feet from the basket. I can think of nobody better than LeBron to help execute those 4-on-3s, either on the roll or as a cutter or on the 3-point line. Like, I just think he can do, to put it very simply, he's great at like a dozen things and like a half dozen things that the Lakers are bad at. So yeah. I think he's just going to help. It's really that simple. I can't believe it really even has to be explained.
Let's go to break here. And when we come back, I want to flip the script and turn it back on Luka and Austin for a second. Jason, something you said perked my ears up earlier when you said that LeBron had what could have been his last great peak and Luka deferring to him. And Austin came up under LeBron's wing there's that famous meme of Austin looking confused as LeBron is pointing things out to him. And that was a long time ago, but their relationship started in that way, with Austin coming up very much and learning at the foot of LeBron James. And Pete, you've always said that any team that LeBron James is on, it's to a certain extent a LeBron team. And his sort of gravitas and the force of personality that he's carried in every room that he's walked into since he was probably 13 in terms of a basketball environment, he's been not only the best player, but the leader and the guy who everyone else naturally, instinctively follows. We can talk shit about a chosen one tattoo, but it really is the truth. Mm-hmm. Guys follow him for exactly that reason. And that famous quote about, I've got broad shoulders for a reason, because he can carry the load and he has had to. And I think that we saw this at the end of Kobe's career, where naturally, instinctively, players fall in line behind him, even if in reality, it's their time to lead. Mm. And so I pose this question to both of you. This is what LeBron can do, and this is how he's going to fit in. And these are all the ways that he could fill in the gaps. Sometimes when a great player gets back on the court, the feeling of everyone else is to make room for that player, rather than for that player, even if he wants to just fit in. Then if I'm making room for you, Pete,
that's right,
and you're just like, well, I'm giving you space, then there are suddenly more gaps to fill. Right? Mm-hmm. Because no one is really doing exactly what the other side sort of expects to happen. And so how do you see that dynamic playing out? And how important is it that the way that Austin's playing now, he continues to push this hard? The way that Luka came out of the gates to start the season, that he continues to push that hard? Because I think those are critical ideas for the identity of the team to be as successful as they can be.
I do too. I think it's absolutely vital that both guys continue down the inertia of the path that they're currently on, right? Like, you are on the right track. Keep doing what you're doing. And that LeBron is going to have to fit around that. But he will also, as you pointed out, and like Jason, you were saying, you would never say that it's a good thing that LeBron got hurt. But this whole dynamic, the way things have played out, is not possible with LeBron around. If for no other reason, for what Darius was just explaining about the mentality of like, oh, that's LeBron James right there. Should I shoot this or should I swing this to LeBron James? Who's wide? You know what I'm saying? You don't average 35 and 10 or whatever Austin's doing with a level of deference. You know what I'm saying? We need both Luka and Austin to attack and do attack the way that they attack. And I think that LeBron, with all of the versatility and brilliance, but also the space and time away to observe, to see the forest from the trees, is going to be able to attack as well in his manner, that's going to be an incredible trio. That simultaneous attack is super important.
When you mentioned the Led Draymond idea, my mind went to the last Olympic version of LeBron that we saw with
beautiful
Steph and KD and all of those elite superstars, where the ball was in LeBron's hands more than in that situation than I think it will be with this group. But that idea of, I don't have to be the guy who's doing everything all of the time or scoring the ball as much, that I can be a part of something great.
But Draymond is a guy who does do everything. And I know that's a distinction between having to do everything, especially in the shot creation realm, right? This is part of why I think LeBron's been begging for more ball handling for years and years. And it's crazy that we end up like, okay, here's Luka and Austin Reeves taking a massive leap. That frees LeBron up in a lot of ways to be able to pursue other interests, right? Whether it's a Draymond type of stuff. And when I say that, LeBron is an entirely different class, and I love Draymond, but it's Draymond's ability to get the 5x5s that he used to get to earlier in his career, because he can actually chart 5+ in all of these 5 different categories. LeBron's perfectly capable of that as well and beyond, while also getting you 20+ points and fitting within the whole flow.
To the point that Darius made earlier, I think that it's not necessarily going to go super smoothly at first. I could see a universe where Luka and Austin try to give LeBron too much space, but LeBron almost doesn't take enough because he doesn't want to step on their toes, and it kind of gets awkward and uncomfortable at first. I mean, I think a classic example of this is the Utah and Charlotte games last year, when Luka first came back. And it was like all of that momentum that LeBron and Austin had seemingly just stopped, because it was like, there's this new thing. And like, what are we doing? Are we playing through Luka? Like, how are we facilitating the give and take, the flow here? I think one of the reasons why I think it will go faster than people think, though, is like, I really do think this version of Luka is substantially better than last year's version of Luka. There's like a fluidity to the way he's getting into the paint that wasn't there last year. I think the easiest way that I could describe this is the Jaden McDaniels matchup. Like when Luka was with Dallas in 2024, he made Jaden McDaniels look like tissue paper, like he couldn't guard him. And then in that Minnesota series last year in the first round, it looked different. It looked like not only did he struggle a little bit against the bigs, even Jaden, it kind of seemed like he didn't have it quite as easy as he did in the past. And then that game last Friday, Jaden was utterly hopeless. He had no chance to guard him. It was crazy. Like he could get wherever he wanted to on the floor. And so some of this is like, Luka's just going to be so damn good that both LeBron and Austin are going to be like, you do your thing, man. We're going to be playing off of you when you have the ball. And ideally, I think we talk about facilitating like your talent into ideal roles. And you mentioned how like LeBron's versatility almost makes him tailor-made to be the more flexible one. Similarly, Luka is at his best right now when he's got the ball in his hands. And I would argue when he's on the floor, he almost needs to have the ball in his hands the entire time. And LeBron and Austin can kind of figure out how to play off of that. I he's just that transcendently good right now. I don't know if you can play another way.
I will say, though, that some of the strides that the team has made offensively this year, just in terms of like cleaning up their schematics and the screens that they're running, the actions that they're running, I do think can help some of that early awkwardness that I fear could be out there in the same way that Jason just articulated. I'd love to hear from both of you about just some of the tactical and schematical stuff that you see that this could actually help facilitate some of the things that we're talking about, whether it's like Luka even starting off of the ball in order to come to the action, and then what that looks like with screens that LeBron could be setting off ball for Luka in order for him to come to the ball, because they've almost gotten away entirely from like any of their horn stuff and all of that, because they don't have three guys to play in the middle of the frame anymore. And so I'm very interested to see what it looks like when all of these guys are back healthy, or even just Luka and Austin, because I think we'll see some of that stuff return to the playbook. But I'm very interested to see how this team operating with everyone in tow, like what it could look like schematically.
Well, I think there's been a huge jump in the connective players and the actions that they take within plays. And so I want to focus on Ayton, Laravia, and Smart in this trio. So I've talked a lot about Ayton's screen setting, the volume of it, the level of locked in with the dance. Okay, I'm going to flip it here. I'm going to slip it, right? And the finishes over the top of Gobert. But his ability to set good screens for elite ball handlers, that's like good offensive line play in football, right? Like, set some good blocks and you've got a stud running back, you do your job on the offensive line. All of a sudden, they start putting up some crazy numbers because you've put them in the environment to be able to do that. But one of my biggest complaints about this team last year was how bad they were mid-play. And so they're running a lot of the same schematics of last year. We're doing the double drags, the stack screens. You're right, the horns have reduced, but that's been a result of the loss of certain players. I think we have to be a ball screen team right now and just give Austin the ball, and that's kind of been how it is. But mid-play, for example, Laravia's ability to use a ball fake at the right time when a team is in rotation and they're scrambling and flying around the perimeter, if they're kind of all moving left and you give them a quick, quick ball fake left and then keep it yourself, a lot of times you're going to have a great seam to rack the closeout on right there. Or the guy next to you is going to be wide open at the top of the key or something like that. Or if you don't back cut ball denial as an off-ball player like Laravia, and you just keep getting pushed out further and further out onto the perimeter, you shut down the offense on that whole side of the court. You cannot get good offense on that side of the court. So like Laravia, all the time, he's getting overplayed, I'm just going to cut through. And so there has to be a sort of an established, and this is achievable, Jason, this is how we play in mid-play, and we understand how to make our how to take advantage of the advantages that Luka creates, that Austin is creating, that the Austin Ayton pick and roll are creating, that the intelligence of the role players, and Smart does a lot of this connective stuff as well. That's one of the things I've seen take a huge leap, right? Like, and that's why I loved DFS and Goodwin, right? But there's more of an offensive tinge to that trio. But anyhow, what is, to your same question Darius posed, what's your answer to that?
Yeah, you know, I think the thing you're getting at with this like almost connective basketball IQ playmaking piece, I think is highly underrated. I was actually talking about this with respect to the Clippers when they got their butts kicked by the Warriors the other night. When the Warriors are capable of blitzing and you're just turning it over in the 4-on-3s because guys are a little bit slow on their cuts or Zoo is a little bit slow on his read. And like, I thought this was a big problem in the Denver series in particular last year in the first round, where they just weren't capitalizing on the fact that Denver kept putting two on the ball throughout the entire series. You have to be able to process quickly in those situations. I think one of the specific dynamics I'm very excited about with LeBron, Austin, and Luka together is kind of the trifecta of having a guy who can really pass that's initiating the action, with a guy who can really score that's the target of the action, and with a screener that is both a threat and that is guarded by a very different type of defender than the scorer that you're targeting. So for instance, we've seen a lot of these, like we saw especially at the beginning of the season when Luka and Austin were both healthy, we would see Luka just attack out of like a pin down out of the weak side corner. Mm-hmm. And so what I like is having an action where you've got LeBron with the ball. So he is both a scoring threat and a guy that's going to be able to see where the defense breaks down. But you also have Austin screening for Luka off the ball, where it's very difficult for them to switch that action. And so if Austin has an opportunity to slip, LeBron will hit it. And if they don't, if they chase over the top, LeBron's going to hit Luka in his pocket as he's coming off the action with a chance to attack. It's like the perfect kind of mix. An initiator and then a scorer, but then the guy who's screening is both a threat and get it. Austin's being guarded by very different types of defenders than Luka's being guarded by.
Quick interjection. How many variations do you think there are of that? Because as you were saying that, I was like, you could flip Luka and LeBron there and kind of have a similar type of thing. Like, how many different ways do you think they can do that?
No, exactly. Like, you can get LeBron stampeding down the lane off of a wide pin down. I think there's versions of it too where I think you could run like Chicago action type stuff where LeBron's the ball handler at the top, dribbling at Luka, who's coming off of an Austin screen, which I think would open up more of like a back cut for Austin or a back cut for Luka, that sort of thing. I just think in general, having LeBron out there as a guy who can dribble, shoot, and pass at an extremely high level just greases the wheels for everything. And like, I mean, you know, to the point that Darius made earlier, like I'm with him. We would all be foolish to not pretend like there's some risk that LeBron comes back and this gets a little bit sloppy, a little bit clunky at times. But I would argue the idealized version of this team, like if we were to talk about a version of the Lakers that wins the championship, it involves all three of these guys working in concert. And that ultimately will depend on these guys finding actions and sequences that work for all three of their skill sets.
One of the things that I still love too is that in ball screen actions, any of them can operate as the ball handler and ball screen actions. One of the things that happened at the beginning of the season when Luka was healthy is that he was setting more on ball screens. It wasn't an enormous amount, but he was screening more. And if that's something that the Lakers are going to continue to do when he's healthy, I'm intrigued by that. So all of these players can handle the ball, can set screens, and can be off of the ball. One of the things I appreciate most about LeBron is go back all the way back to media day, and he talked about one of the things that he worked on a lot this summer was his catch and shoot threes. Now, to Jason's point, he's been doing this well for like the last two seasons, and in two of the last three seasons, he's shot the ball extremely well from beyond the arc. Having the ability to put Austin in like weak side corner and LeBron in the slot, and LeBron being the decision maker off of whether it's going to be swing, or him taking a spot up three from the slot, which is like an area where he's an excellent shooter, particularly on the left side of the court. So I could envision Luka sort of in the middle of the frame, Austin in left corner, LeBron on left wing in the slot, Ayton coming to set a ball screen for Luka to go to his right hand, right? Ayton rolling into the pocket or all the way to the basket, and then Luka throwing the skip to the corner, potentially to Austin Reeves, who then pitches up to LeBron James, who is either going to then like swing the ball back to Luka, put his head down and drive to the basket, or just simply take a spot up three from a spot on the court where I think I expect him to make probably anywhere between 38 to 43% of his spot up chances as a shooter. And so we talk about three-player action a ton, like within the horn sets and like, oh, look at all this fancy diagram. It could also just be three-man action with Austin in weak side corner and LeBron in weak side slot while Luka does what he's probably the best player in the world at in doing, which is come off a ball screen to his strong hand and choose between a center who can finish anywhere between 15 feet and right at the basket and two weak side threats who are capable of scoring you 50 points in a basketball game. It seems like a bit of a cheat code. Now, there is chemistry still to work out and timing stuff to work out, but the epitome of we can do this and it not even be this super organized, let's draw it up on the grease board sort of action that's all intricate. No, it's playground basketball to a certain degree. Reads. And how are you going to stop it?
Yep.
It's super exciting.
It really is. It really is. The possibilities.
Really quick here, Pete. This is one of the things that drives me crazy because like we saw a lot of this last year with a lesser version of Austin and a lesser version of Luka. Like this will happen sometimes where you'll have a bad playoff series, like what happened in Minnesota, and then suddenly it just puts a stink on the entire season. Sure. And like, all of a sudden we're just like, oh, we're just not good enough. And it's like, well, actually Luka's better this year. Now you have a center. All of a sudden, even just the Minnesota matchup looks fundamentally different. But there were stretches against Oklahoma City where you're like, good God. When you have these guys playing off of each other, they're just getting a great shot every single time against an elite defense. And so like that's the thing. There's like really magical potential for this group offensively. And we've seen versions of it with lesser versions of this team. And that like, I think they have a sky high ceiling on that end of the floor.
Absolutely. It's going to be fun to track the story of that. And Jason, it's been great having you back, man. Where can our listeners find your show?
So wherever you get your podcast under Hoops Tonight, and then our YouTube channel Hoops Tonight, and then obviously follow me on Twitter at @_JasonLT. That's where I'm most active right now.
All right. This has been a blast. Everybody have a great weekend. We will be back soon. Until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. They will. The Lakers win the game! Rebound of Lowry. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good!
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me?
Unreal!
Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two, one.
Miss it!
Bryant! Unbelievable.
It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yeah.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Bad insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.